This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and this afternoon I'm joined by Superintendent Charles Oskey of Johnson County School District Number 1. Good afternoon, Charles. Nice to see you.
Good afternoon. Glad to see you again. We're midway through the summer already.
We are midway through the summer, and I recall we sat down not very long ago, that probably to you feels somewhat distant, at the beginning, just as the school year was winding up, and we talked about really what an intensely busy time this is for administration, and then of course, there was an additional process, which is to find a new high school principal for Buffalo High School. And so that has been the focus, I would imagine, for you for the last few weeks. That process is winding up. Maybe you could just explain where we are in that and what happens.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. I know it's a great question. So we are wrapping up with the process. The board will make a public announcement on the recommendation from the committee tomorrow. So we do have a special board meeting at 6. But to talk a little bit about the details, we did interview two internal candidates. The process, the interview process consisted of 20-plus committee members plus the community forum. And it was great conversations all the way across the spectrum. So the committee was made up of BHS leadership team, educational leadership team. We had classified staff representative. We actually had Sheridan College and the University of Wyoming Extension Office sit on the committee, because BHS does, all high schools, not just BHS, really have a different connection than you would in the elementary. So those were two additional pieces. We had obviously the district admin team, which is critical, from curriculum to the business office, myself, the ops team was represented. So there was a lot of great representation. We had a counselor from BHS. We had Ellie, who, as everybody knows, the head secretary runs the building, so she was a part of the process. So, everything happened at BHS. The interviews took place on the average about 2 hours, so that was a good process. Very long day on that Wednesday. And I thought the community forum was well attended. We had 27. We had over 50 people that I counted, quickly counted, but we had 27 surveys returned, which is really good, because 20 of the 50 were also committee members. So you take that back. So we had almost, you know, I would say 95% of the people that attended from the community fill out a survey, which really was parallel with what the committee did too. So excited about the process, excited about tomorrow. And then, like everything, there's a dominoes effect. So it's not the end. It kind of will create some other things that will be have to be more of an administrative recommendation and process to make sure we're ready to go August 1st. And for me, if you really think about it, knowing our community, as I always reference, the Johnson County Fair is the World's Fair. We're there. We're 4.5 weeks out to the beginning of fair, and everybody knows that as fair wraps up, that's the beginning of the school year. So we're here, not a lot of time, but excited about the process and really excited for the future of not only BHS, but the district leadership team.
So thank you for that. There, a couple of things came to mind as you were talking about that. First of all, that's a large committee, a committee of 20.
Yeah.
There must be pros and cons with that.
So in my world, it's all pros.
Okay.
Everybody hears the same thing, and it's conducted in such a way that everybody has a voice. I've seen those committees that you get divided, 3 or 4 different committees, everybody interviews, and then you come back with 4 different opinions, which doesn't create, in my world, what I believe a true good supporting system for anybody new in that position, especially if all 4 don't align. Committee came out unanimous through this process. A lot of great conversations took place. So this type of committee that large ran in such a way that everybody has input and everybody believes in the recommendation that's being made is really going to give any person a real good start. And we've seen the same with MetalArk. We've seen the same with the middle school. So yeah, is it a little outside the box thinking? But I would say anybody that's sat in that process, that has sat in a couple other interviews of that level, their comments have come back. It was one of the best interview processes they've sat in. So really solid with that. But there's always that potential of a negative. I mean, nothing's perfect, right?
So you also mentioned that the community, those people who attended the community forum had the opportunity to fill out a questionnaire. And what role did those points that people made on that questionnaire, how did that actually contribute? I did have somebody say to me as I left that I don't know whether this anybody actually will look at this or not. So maybe
absolutely
you could just explain that.
Absolutely we do. So the very next day we came back, we tallied up the scoring on all of them, and I presented to the committee. This is what the community and the stakeholders did, and we read the comments. So for the community members that participated, I want them to be aware that information was actually the first information we presented at the table. At the Friday morning meeting, we talked about feedback, we talked about the scores, and then that led the conversation. You know, again, the community is, we need the community and the stakeholders to understand that their input was valued. And so I can, with integrity and honesty, say that was the first thing on the table. And it was great information. As a matter of fact, if I ever have to do an administrative one again, there were some people that did some detailed feedback that I would actually change my survey a little bit so it's a little more, allows a little more feedback. So great feedback in the process, but Charles will grow if he ever has to do that again with a little bit different survey. So,
well, thank you. I'm sure that the people who did fill that in will be happy to hear that. The two candidates going forward, and that will be announced tomorrow, the successful candidate will be announced tomorrow, they're both internal candidates. Maybe we could just spool back a little way, and the position was advertised. Did you have candidates apply from outside the district?
We did. So we had kind of a system glitch, because the intention was... because of our reduction in ADM, I've been very intentional.
And can we just pause and explain what that means? Yes. I know you and I are familiar with that.
Average daily membership, so a reduction in number of students in the district.
Which basically also then equates to how much money you get.
Which is
in a
how
very
much
oversimplified
money you get
term.
In simplified, and but it also creates the number of staff members that we're funded for. So in that process, we have been, from the beginning of the year, every building leadership, there's been an initiative out there that we starting to look to hire internally first before we go out and look for reductions. So this is similar to what I've asked building leadership to do, because I knew we had candidates. We did have two that applied.
From outside the district?
Well, inside.
Inside.
But there was a glitch, which, just going to put it out there, we're going away from frontline and we're going to a new system. That it wouldn't let people apply internally. So we did open it up. We did have three candidates outside the district that had put their applications in. However, knowing it was going to be internal first, we reviewed all three externals in case the internals didn't meet our expectations, and then we ranked them. So there was always that plan B if the two internals didn't line up with what the committee and the community wanted, but that was just far from... our candidates lined up with what the community wants. So we did take everybody into consideration, but I will honestly say our two internal candidates were heads and tails above even the externals.
Okay, so that, I think that's something that people would like to know, is whether the priority put on internal candidates because of funding and outside issues, whether that actually restricts the quality or is detrimental to the quality.
I think that's a great question. I'm not going to sacrifice quality just for to get it done with that piece. However, we, like most districts, successful districts, we've got to start growing internally. And I don't know if I shared that document with you about hiring. I know I shared it with the newspaper, but I'll share it with you. There's so much truth to that, having a connection to the community and success of a leadership. but growing people internally. If you look at those very long-term successful districts, they start growing people early. And that's kind of been my push for the last 18 months, is we got to start recruiting and training and getting people, because that's what creates a long-term sustainable culture and community.
So let's explore that for a moment, because that might seem a little counter to tradition, where you think about moving and going for promotion or rising up the ladder or whatever. Then there are those people, I think, who might argue that it's very easy for a district or to become stagnant if it's only just reprocessing its own.
If you're not doing the level of professional development that we're doing and being engaged like we are, absolutely they'll be stagnant. But again, you've got to set the bar pretty high, and we're not just recruiting anybody internally. There has to be certain characteristics that you want to keep within that piece. Absolutely. And that would never be my leadership style to say, oh, we're just going to place somebody in that position because we want to hire internally. They still have to be a quality candidate, and they have to put in the time.
And of course, there are some practical things which a lot of entities have been butting up against in this community of trying to recruit new people, which is that you can't find housing that you will suit, that you can either afford or actually suits what you need or want. There are less and less couples who are single income, and so that means that the partner of whoever you employ also has to find a job that they are happy to do and pays at a sufficient level. And so there are some practical issues.
Those are real world. Those aren't just theories. So John Corbin was a great hire. He's an external. So, I mean, there's two ends of the candidates here. And that struggle of finding a house is real. And that's even for an administrative piece. So those are real things that we have. Also, the other thing I want to put on the plate, that you're really hiring season for administrators is January and February. So most people are under contract, getting ready to go, and signed up to raise. So to be doing this in June and July means people have already signed their contracts. And then you hear a lot of, well, we can do an interim. No. If we have somebody quality, let's hire the right person, let's get it done. I mean, those are all options that are always going to be on the table. But just to say we're going to hire internally and then just be satisfied, I want to put a little credit back on, too. We have some amazing people in Johnson County. This is not your typical internal pool. We have some very high-quality people. And I think that's the same with teaching staff, but we have some people that don't realize their potential as leadership either. So, you know, encouraging them and growing them in a system where I feel as a district we're very proactive with what, what highly successful districts are doing is we're about growing that people. Now, if you don't have somebody in that position, absolutely, but if you're going to open up and bring quality in, that happens December, January, and February, because that's kind of the time frame. It's not a 2-week turnaround. And this BHS position that we're going to recommend tomorrow, they don't start August 1st. They start Thursday morning at 8 o'clock with Charles, and they've got about 6 weeks of a lot of work that needs to be done in order for us to even start the school year. So, again, even a new person in that position wouldn't have till, maybe mid-August. So there are just so many little factors that everybody needs to remember is this isn't a position that you just pull somebody off the street. You got to find somebody who has experience but also has the ability to lead. And we're fortunate in Johnson County.
You now, either way, and I'm not privy to the choice that the committee made yet, but either way, you have a little...
Musical
chairs issue, because you have one candidate, Jake Evans, who is currently the principal in KC, or you have Chris Cox, who's the assistant principal and teaches science in Buffalo High School. So how are you going to meet that challenge?
Well, Charles has a plan A, B, and C in either scenario, and the time frame is we're just going to have to make some decisions and move people into positions, because we're starting school just around the corner, and I want to come back to the emphasis is we have some very amazing individuals in the district. So that transition is going to be fast and quick. My goal is to get all the dominoes filled by mid-July. So we'll see some decisions happening. But it's really asking a lot that you trust my leadership and to understand that we're putting the quality people that we are. But you will see with time they're quality people and the transitions of what that would look like. So we do have some options. Without getting too far into the weeds and getting myself in trouble, I just want to come back to the statement. We have some quality options in Johnson County School District, number one, to fill positions and do it in a right way that's actually going to be a positive impact with the transition. So
another position that we've talked about before is the athletics director at Buffalo High School. What is the status on that?
Okay, so as soon as things happen officially Wednesday night, I am meeting with leadership Thursday morning. And we're going to talk about what that restructure
looks
like.
The new leadership.
Yes, the new leadership. And we're going to talk about the potential options of what that restructure will look like. So, yes.
So, is that, too, also very late in the so-called season?
Absolutely. But we have a plan.
Okay. All right. Well.
But with that plan, I'm going to say people are going to have to, once we get, because we are going to go away from a certified contracted position to stipend positions, which is typically what 80s and our size of the woods now are doing, which is going to give us a lot more flexibility.
What does that mean to people who don't understand what stipend and...
So a contracted certified employee would be somebody that's just like a teacher. There, it's a contract, whereas a stipend is like a coach where you get a certain amount of money for conducting this. So it gives you a lot more flexibility within that piece. One of the things I want to look at is who is overseeing the athletic departments or AD position has to have some type of administrative certification with the evaluations and dealing with people. So the complexity of that is a certified contract is probably more an administrative level contract. So if we were a bigger school, it would be like a principal, assistant principal, time assistant principal who does all the AD duties. So that's kind of what that balance looks like.
So with a new person in place and maybe it funded in a slightly different way, will you also be revisiting what maybe the authority that individual has or the policies which they
when we talk about restructuring to? We're talking about restructuring who's responsible for what. Yes.
Okay. And so what's the process for that? Because we're hop, skip, and a jump away from
the
first ball bouncing in the new season.
It's going to happen quick. It really is. And it's going to fall on our meetings Thursday morning. So,
okay.
And again, getting those things in place for the first of the year is going to happen in the next 4 weeks.
Okay. Well, I look forward to coming back and hearing more flesh on the bones. I think it's both the leadership position at BHS is a critical one, but also the athletic director and that role generally. There's a lot of interest in that right now. So I look forward to having a conversation with everyone about that.
And throw in top of that I'm going to be at Grandpa during this time frame too. There's a lot of things that Mr. Oski has on his plate.
Well, congratulations, future
Grandpa.
Well,
thank you. So I'm hoping to have it all done before that rolls out.
Well, there are a couple of other things on your plate too, though, aren't there?
Yes, there is.
Recalibration, which is a process that we've talked about a little bit in the past. But in essence, it's really the state revisiting how funds are distributed, and that process is happening by committee over the coming months. There was a meeting couple of weeks ago, I think, wasn't it? Maybe less than that. Maybe it was just last week. The first meeting, and then there's another one in September. The July sessions were cancelled. What is the significance, and do you have any sense, having been involved in those, as to what is coming?
Yeah. So, first of all, Travis, our board chair, myself, and Connie as a business manager, were allowed to be on what's called on a professional judgment panel. So there were four in person and four virtual, which they brought business managers and boards and teachers in and had a one-on-one conversation. The group was limited to 16 people in each region. So that was, so we got to go to that. And so the questions they asked is what works well, what can we do better, and what needs to change? So those were the four critical questions that we brought to the table. So that kind of give them an understanding of what we have concerns with you know, and there's the lawsuit. So that's the next thing that got brought up. So now there's two lawsuits. So there was first the lawsuit that was won by the WEA and the school districts that were a part of that suit. But now there's another lawsuit with the WEA and parents. But the reality, those two lawsuits in themselves do have driving power where we're headed with recalibration, because recalibration is going to have to address what came out of the first lawsuit, which are some of the questions that we did see. So I did get to go and attend recalibration that first day, which
and
was last Tuesday.
Let me just
Tuesday.
Stop you for a moment. The first lawsuit to which you refer actually was adjudicated, finding that the state had insufficiently funded public education. And so it is now, the state is now under pressure to...
Which they appealed it.
Yes.
And so now it's going to federal courts. So we'll see what happens, yes.
Do you have a sense of what are the overall, what are the themes that are coming up that are being spoken about in the, in when it, recalibration is being discussed?
Well, obviously it's teacher salaries. You know, we as a district want to keep the block model so we can disperse funds according to our needs and not get into categorical grants. But you got teacher salaries, you got the benefit packages that go along with that. Food service is a big one. SROs is another hot topic. You know, how do you fund all of those different things with that process and what it looks like? But overall, if you talk about what 80% of your budget is, a lot of that focus is on how do you get the base salary up. And so, there, you know, that's always the number one topic of how do we get our base salaries up in the model so that we can compete and bring those quality teachers back in. So that's probably the biggest thing. I would really like to see a real focus on food service, at least a reimbursement for salaries and benefits in order to keep quality people, because we know that's a key component. SROs are on the table, but how do you fund the one-to-one technology was a part of the lawsuit.
And an SRO is?
School resource officer.
Thank you.
Yep. And then you got that one-to-one technology, which most districts have already moved to. But again, COVID funds are now over. So it's the replacement of some of that. More importantly, it's not the one-to-one technology in front of the computers. It is the funding to keep our infrastructure supported with the ransomware, two-factor authentication, everything's out there. That expense for, even though it is a lot, that expense for that one-to-one Chromebook is minimal compared to the infrastructure that we have to upkeep, because our phones are on it, our security cameras are on it, our door systems are on it, our wireless is on it. So everything we do is based on that infrastructure. So a lot of people are putting that emphasis on it's not just the Chromebook that we need funding for. It's that funding of supporting that infrastructure that all of us have put a lot of money into with COVID and some of these grant funds.
And it would seem intuitive to think that that is only going to become more complex.
Absolutely.
So you have to be forward thinking.
Well, and those that don't remember, I mean, the PowerSchool hack itself created a lot of things. Just our insurance itself, our liability insurance with the district went up almost $47,000 this year, just due to concealed carry, the liability that goes along with cyber insurance, and that our buildings are getting older. So that's a lot of money for a short amount of stuff. So
you mentioned concealed carry. Next week, 1st of July, the policy changes. And it's not just schools, it's public buildings. You will be able to take guns into those places as you haven't been able to do before. What has the school district done to prepare?
Well, the policy that goes into effect tomorrow and the state law that goes into effect July 1st, we have our training, volunteer training. I want to repeat that three times. Volunteer training, volunteer training, volunteer training for 15 positions. Is July 1st through the 25th with TAC-1. And then basically the liability does follow on the adults that choose to conceal carry.
Have you got 15 individual volunteers?
12 right now.
OK. Okay. And across building...
Well, I take that back, 9, but potential of 12. And if we don't get enough to fill it, we're going to open it to the community.
So. Okay. And so are they across different buildings or are you... they? I mean, because that's the concern, isn't it?
That
you are well enough prepared to respond. And that is the purpose of these individuals going through some training.
Well, but it's not just well enough to respond, but can you respond? Where are you at? And so I'm going to still come back to my statement. I don't feel the concealed carry law makes our schools any safer. As a matter of fact, I think it makes us less safe. But it's also my job as a superintendent to follow the expectations of legislation. And that law basically says people can conceal carry if they have a concealed carry permit. So how we manage that is going to be interesting throughout the year. We're going to have to monitor and adapt as we go through that. So training, yes, but that training being specific to how we handle things is how situations arise. But awareness, because we can't ask people to disclose whether they're carrying or not. I mean, there's just so many rules behind it.
So what is actually the purpose and the focus of the training?
Again, part of just that comfort zone is that we want to make sure anybody that is interested in carrying does have the proper training. So, and to understand that it's not just simply owning a firearm. There is responsibilities with a firearm, and there's responsibilities if you choose to take action. And what that responsibility looks like is the purpose of providing the training.
So what, if any, communication, education, information are you planning on putting out into the community so that when people walk into those buildings and whether they're entitled to and are carrying a concealed weapon or not, what do you want people in to know? I mean, people who are sitting down in the gym, in a basketball game, what do you want everybody in that area?
Well, I
to
just
know?
Want to know. It's state law. And, you know, concealed carry is allowed in not just schools, but public institutions or funded institutions. So that's just not schools. It's going to be a change in how we approach things as a community and as a culture. I still feel strongly that we are solid during normal school hours. It's those after school events that doesn't matter. It's that just so many uncontrollable things that we don't know about. So communication to the community will be potentially a sign on the building that says Wyoming state law says you have to have a permit in order to conceal carry. So some of those things are things we are going to approach in a way that we just try to keep the public informed as we make decisions. And a lot of that's going to happen more, unfortunately, probably end of July, first part of August, as some of these new rules and what districts are finding out they have to do and not don't have to do. So it is an adventure. Would there be a preference that this law went into effect next July to give us all an opportunity to really wrap our heads around? But we just got our insurance today. So now that insurance and what's required out of that is the next trickle effect. So make a promise and can't really make a promise until we determine what our requirements are.
And what role, if any, has local law enforcement had in your conversations and development?
They know it's coming, and I've asked them to speak on the first day with teachers, which will be a part of my expectations that will inform teachers, you know, what the rules are about concealed carry, and if there is an incident in the school, just to be aware that they could be considered part of the scenario. So just being real about it falls on them if they choose to carry.
I mean, it does present some challenges for law enforcement responding to anything where there is a firearm involved, because you can't be sure who's the good, to put it very basically, who's the good guy and who isn't.
Yeah.
You don't know. And in that highly adrenalized state, there could be error.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So it's tricky. And I suppose we'll watch how.
But see, this is why you and I have great conversations, because then Charles goes back and thinks, oh, this is something else we need to communicate.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
One final point, and talking about communication, is smart personal devices.
Oh, yes. And then we still got homeschool policy, too.
Yes, we do.
So we too have two more to talk about.
So there was a pilot project. It was described that took place for the last quarter of the last semester of last year, where basically there was a restriction.
Yep.
Limitations were put across different buildings, presumably age appropriate, where personal smart devices, which we like to call cell phones, but of course it's not limited to cell phones, were limited during the school day in various ways. That is now that same policy, identical policy, the same limitations, they're now just being ratified and mandated into Johnson County School District policy. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. So we'll take what we, the trial run, and we just put it into a policy. And it'll be building leadership's responsibility to put it in their handbooks and just kind of follow through for next year. So the trial went very well. Not to say it was perfect. There were some hiccups, but things we identified for next year. So I think the trial went very well. But the one thing that I pointed out with administration before they left for the summer was we already had called cell phone policies. The main issue that came out of the original survey was the enforcement of that. So even though this trial went well, I think the big test of the waters is going to be how consistent we are with the policy now, and that comes back to building leadership. So
how was enforcement? Because any policy, whether it's the same, just being repackaged in some way, or whether it's something completely new and different, it is only as good as it is enforced. How did that actually go across the different buildings?
I thought it went very well. It didn't have any, well, let's knock on wood, Charles didn't have anything rise to the top here. Not to say there weren't some issues, because there was, but they were able to be addressed. And I think one of the celebrations behind it is because the board was a part of this process and they were very adamant this is what we're going to do. So even the pushback that came, through general conversation with the Board of Trustees is they are 100% behind this. There isn't, I'm going to say, a majority of the administration was in on these committee meetings. You had feedback from parents. There was concerns, let's be real, that the sky was falling and Y2K was happening again and the world was going to come to an end. It did not. But there were some very good points, I think, even more at the high school level. How do we address that? So those are the things. Part of that initiative was to identify what those are, which I'm glad we did early, because now we're pushing out the two-factor authentication now.
So I think I know what you're referring to, which is that if you're a high school student and you are taking college classes through Sheridan College or any other way, you need to access your classes. You do that on your school Chromebook, but you need two-factor authentication.
You do.
Authentication to get to that, for which you need a cell phone.
So we're processing what that looks like again. Yeah. But we're also responsible for getting kids prepared for the real world, which two-factor authentication is there. So that's the committee even came up. K-8, we're solid. It's the high school where some of that flexibility in preparing for the real world and what.
Well, it is a transition time.
It is a transition time. So excited about it. Grateful we took a year to implement it. There were a lot of districts that just took 2 weeks, implemented it right before the start of the school year. And I'm excited to see where we land at the end of the year. But it comes back to really starting the beginning of the year saying this is what we're doing.
So how will you evaluate this?
Leadership meetings. What kind of discipline records do you have? Everybody loves a survey, but it might be some kind of follow-up survey. Are we being consistent with how we are enforcing these rules?
So the purpose of the policy really was about reducing disruption on learning. About teaching focus.
It was about instruction and focusing on instructional time.
And as a byproduct of that, rebuilding interpersonal skills.
Yes.
And one of the things that the school counselors across the district had talked about was they were observing a loss in strong interpersonal interaction between students and an inability to function effectively without a device.
And you remember, we also, we hand delivered over 60 surveys to businesses too.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of businesses were all about supporting it because they're struggling with lost productivity because of cell phones. And that whole idea of instructional time for them is lost productivity. So there was a lot of support. So this wasn't just a parents and a research saying, our community, who I mean, I walked 30 of them. I think Steve did 30 surveys. So we did this with our local businesses too, and it was pretty unanimous when the data came back. So hopefully that trickles into that fact as we're preparing kids for the real world.
That is a very hard thing to measure and quantify, but you would expect over time, maybe in cohorts, to see a difference that might be measurable.
And I hope so. You know, and I expressed that in the committee is, once it becomes a common factor, or I wouldn't want to say a common practice, or maybe it becomes a habit that we're not using our cell phones so much, it won't be such a big deal. It'll trying to find that balance, and I hope we're on that journey. But you're only as good as how you implement it, you enforce it, you monitor it, and you manage it. So, and that's where we're headed next year.
Okay. Well, thank you. And the last thing you wanted to mention was the...
Well, there's one more policy. So with state statute that changed, homeschoolers still have to register with the school district, but they do not have to provide their curriculum for improvement. So those are the three policies you'll see come across for approval tomorrow for the second reading.
Okay. Well, we're almost at the beginning of July. In a
yes.
moment... it will be, the school bell will be ringing again. I look forward to hearing about who is appointed as the new high school principal. And there is a lot still going on.
There is, and I look forward to our next conversation where I can explain more of the details of what's going on.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to that too, Charles. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.